explained. But I didn't want to. He pulled her toward him by the necklace, kissing her silent. Their lips soon found a rhythm, and their bodies met, seeking the same. Seeking a moment of perfect balance. A moment that held everything. And in that moment, they lost all consideration for anything beyond themselves. For in that moment, there was no pain. There were no scars. And a curse was a worry of a bygone era. Here, the only thing that mattered was before each of them. Here and now. I love you, Sherzad breathed. You are all that I am. And you are all that I will be. For here they existed beyond time. Here they could no longer feel the place where she ended and he began. It's late, Khalid said. You should sleep. What are you talking about? I'm not doing anything. Stop smiling and go to sleep. How do you know I'm smiling? You're not even looking at me. I can feel you smiling, Shazi. The warm sound of her laughter stole through Khalid's skin, heating the coldest reaches of his soul. He lay on his stomach, with his eyes closed, trying to dispel the torturous ache in his head. That his pain would choose now to trouble him was merely further proof of his endless misfortune, or perhaps further proof of fate's twisted humor. The cushions rustled around him. Sherzad eased onto his back, draping her small form over his. He felt the press of her cheek between his shoulder blades. Then, with a feather-light touch, she ran both hands up his arms to the nape of his neck. "Do you want me to stop?" she asked when she realized her attempts to soothe were to no avail. "No." "What do you want?" her tone bordered on playful. Khalid thought for a moment, trying to banish the images her words brought to mind. Perhaps a story. He smiled to himself, despite the thudding in his brow. Any story? Khalid nodded, his eyes still closed. She leaned close to whisper by his ear. A young man was strolling through the wood when he came upon a honey-tongued dove. He paused to listen to the sweet melody of its song, and was amazed when the dove stopped singing and began speaking to him. It was as though she were from a dream, one from which Khalid never wished to wake. He felt her smile again. The dove said, "Young man, you seem to have good taste. I'd like to share a secret with you. If you take this path here, you will come across a lacquered red door with a wooden handle. Before it, you will find a tribe of weeping men. Ask them not why they weep. Merely pass through the door, and you will find riches beyond your wildest dreams." The young man was so surprised to encounter both a talking dove and the promise of riches beyond his wildest dreams, that he eagerly followed the honey-tongued dove's directions through the wood. "The foolishness of youth," Khalid murmured. Sherzad laughed softly, and the sound rolled down his spine. Just as the dove had said, the young man came into a clearing with a single door of red lacquer, latched shut by a wooden handle. Before it sat a tribe of weeping men. The young man ignored the weeping men and proceeded straight to the door. He pressed on the wooden handle, then stepped across the threshold. Before him was a hanging garden, but it was not a garden of flowers or fruit. It was a garden of brilliant jewels. Where there should have been an apple orchard, there was instead a copse of emeralds. Where there should have been berries, he found rubies the size of his thumb. Bright yellow jasper gleamed in place of oranges. Glittering amethysts dripped in place of hyacinths. Diamonds and pearls lay shimmering on branches of jessamine. The young man stuffed his pockets full of jewel fruits and flower gems, laughing until his sides hurt. She twined her fingers through his. When he finished walking through the hanging garden, he arrived at a beautiful village overlooking a crystalline sea. He immediately bought the most magnificent home he could find. After he'd traversed the whole of this village, he came across another lacquered door with another wooden handle. He pressed it open and traipsed into the market of a grand city, filled with the sights and sounds of trade and the smells of delicacies. In no time at all, he had amassed a sizable amount of gold. The quality of the gems he possessed was unparalleled, and his knack for trading knew no bounds. It seemed no matter where he turned, luck was on his side. When he happened upon yet another door with a wooden handle, he pushed through it, only to cross paths with the loveliest young woman he had ever beheld. Hand in hand, they made their way across another stunning vista, filled with verdant valleys and sparkling springs. Never once did the young man look back, ever forward, ever toward the next door. Then, many years later, when the young man could no longer call himself young, he came across another door with another wooden handle, and, without the slightest hesitation, he stepped through it, heedless of where it might lead. The only sound in the room was that of their shared breaths. Sherazade's voice took on a melancholy note. He found himself wandering through a wood, stepping into a familiar clearing, surrounded by a tribe of weeping men. The lacquered door before him did not have a handle. In that moment, the not-so-young man understood. So he sat beside his tribe and began weeping. The silence stretched thin for a time. "Why did you choose that particular story?" Khalid finally asked. Another stretch of silence. "Sometimes I worry I want too much," Sherazade said. "It's not possible, for you deserve everything you want and more." She shifted to rest her chin on his shoulder, causing Khalid to wince. "Does it hurt that much?" Her concern was all too evident. A part of Khalid knew he should lie to spare Sherazade worry. But he simply did not see the point. To him, lies rarely served their intended purpose, except in necessitating more lies. "Yes," Khalid admitted, "but I'll live." "I have something that might help." Sherazade placed a suggestive kiss in the middle of his back. Despite the siege in his forehead, Khalid considered her offer. Her dark hair was a shining veil against his shoulder. The smell of rain clung to every curl. Even now, he could picture the way her lips parted when he kissed the hollow at her throat. The way her soft breath washed across his skin. The way her slim hands... Khalid almost groaned in defeat. "I am more than willing, but I believe we've tried that remedy tonight. More than once." Another lilting spate of laughter filled the air. She slid off his back, leaving him cold. Khalid cracked open his eyes to see Sherazade step to her pile of discarded garments. When she returned, she held a square of green stone in her palm, strung onto a leather string. "It's a talisman. Musa Effendi said it might help to ward away your sleeplessness." "Musa Effendi?" Khalid rolled over in protest. The last thing he desired was a gift from the cowardly Magus he'd known as a boy. The coward who'd stood by and watched his mother drown in her own blood. "Enough." Sherazade raised a hand to his chest, staying his objections. "Take help when it is offered, Khalid Jan. True strength isn't about sovereignty. It's about knowing when you need help and having the courage to accept it." Though his eyes burned, Khalid studied her as she spoke, as though he were forming an imprint, forever indelible in his mind. Her impudent chin, her jewel eyes and vagabond hair. No one could deny that Shahrazad was beautiful, but it was not simply her beauty that captivated Khalid beyond compare. It was the way she carried herself with such poise, such strength. "You're very wise, Shahrazad al-Khaizuran. Perhaps you should rule Khorasan and leave me to languish in your chamber until you have need of me." "Perhaps I should." She lay alongside him. "But I was not born a boy." "I've long thought such a thing should not matter." Khalid draped one of her legs around his. "Will you at least see if the talisman works?" In place of a response, Khalid buried his face in her dark waves, taking in the fragrance of lilacs and rain. She blew an exasperated puff of air above his head. "You..." "I'll try it," he said into her neck. "Now go to sleep." Shahrazad turned away from him, burrowing into the crook of his arm. "Khalid?" He fought back the beginnings of a smile. "Yes?" "You don't need to say you love me. I know you do, but... may I ask why you won't?" Though it was posited nonchalantly, Khalid felt the beat of Shahrazad's heart between her shoulder blades, felt it quicken, and it pained him to know he'd given her cause to doubt his affections. But he'd known for some time that he owed her an explanation. In truth, he owed her much more than that. Of course she wanted to know why. She was a girl who freely spoke her mind and generously bestowed her sentiments on those she found deserving. After all Khalid had done, and everything he'd failed to do, it would forever amaze him that she still found him to be one of the deserving. Khalid pulled her closer. "At Eva's grave, I swore I would spend my life showing those I loved how I felt, and never resorting to words. I promised I would do for others what I'd failed to do for her. Not to profess love, but instead to act upon it." They lay in silence for a time. Though he was unable to see her reaction, Khalid knew she was thinking. Knew she was taking his promise into consideration. Perhaps it was foolish of him to hold fast to it. A promise to a girl who no longer lived. A girl who had suffered so greatly in life, and died with his lie blistering her ears. A lie of love, the one thing she'd asked of him, the one thing he'd never attempted to give. In all things, Khalid had failed Eva. In this, he wished to succeed, and he did not make promises lightly. "I understand," Shahrazad said. "Shazi, since you can't say it, will you at least tell me how much you love me?" Khalid ran the tip of his nose beside her ear, a grateful smile upon his lips. "From the stars to the stars." Once and for all. Shahrazad snuck back into her tent just as dawn was cresting along the horizon. She felt fortunate to have managed the return journey unseen. In truth, she'd left Ray with not a moment to spare. Though she desperately wanted to stay with Khalid and watch the sky catch fire around them, she could not risk being seen. And she knew she had to answer for how she'd left things with Irsa the night before. As soon as their tent fell shut, Shahrazad turned to see her sister sitting up in her bedroll, her eyes red-rimmed and bloodshot. Clearly, Irsa had not slept well, and might even have shed a tear or two. Shahrazad stifled a sigh. "Irsa, I told Rahim you were gone." A note of insolence punctuated her raspy whisper. "What?" Shahrazad almost dropped the bundle containing the magic carpet. Irsa bit her lip. "Since you've missed breakfast almost every morning, he already suspected you were up to something, so I..." "So you simply told him I was gone?" "After you left, I went to speak with him and..." Irsa cleared her throat while toying with the edge of her blanket. "And He knows you're not sick. He already knew something had been occupying your time these past few nights. So, when he walked me back to our tent and saw that you weren't here... Sherazad could not be angry with her sister. She would not be angry with her. Irsa had done so much to be a bastion of strength for Sherazad, to offer understanding and support when no one else would dare to do so. And Sherazad had done little to deserve it. All those times Irsa had desired her confidence, Sherazad had demurred from giving it, knowing her secrets were too dangerous for a girl so earnest and tender-hearted. Here was proof Sherazad had been wise to withhold it. When pressed, Irsa had been incapable of lying to Rahim as to Sherazad's whereabouts. Had Irsa truly known where Sherazad was, she would undoubtedly have told him. What might have happened then? Sherazad shuddered to think. No, Sherazad would not be angry with her sister for this lapse in judgment. It could not have been helped. It was just the way Irsa was, honest to a fault. Even still, when Sherazad glanced down at her sister, her temper started to rise. "I know you're angry with me," Irsa continued, a quaver entering her voice. "But I did not intentionally divulge your secret to Rahim. In truth, this is your own fault. What did you expect? You've missed breakfast for almost a week. I don't know what's come over you of late. You've become careless, distracted." The flare of anger spiked even higher, even wider. Are you planning to go out again tonight?" Irsa asked. What started as a squeak finished wrapped in steel. "Yes." Sherazad's own answer was dangerously defiant. "Even though it grows more difficult each day to hide your secret?" "You don't have to lie for me." "Of course I do." Irsa threw back her tattered blanket and stood tall. "You're my sister, but your friends are worried about you, and soon their worry will turn to suspicion." Lines of concern pleaded her brow. "Please don't go out again tonight. I beg you." Sherazad thought quickly. She had already made plans to take Khalid to the fire temple to meet with Artan and Musa Zaragoza. If she did not return to Rey as promised, Khalid would undoubtedly worry, and those at the fire temple would be left waiting for them. She was without means to deliver word to either side. She swallowed hard, knowing these issues paled in comparison to the larger matter at hand. Be honest. In truth, Sherazad had no intention of denying herself a single moment with Khalid, simply to mollify her sister. She knew it was selfish, but his absence had become a lasting presence, and Sherazad was tired of doing nothing to change circumstances, of merely waiting in the desert for life to happen to her. All that would end tonight, destiny was for fools. Sherazad would not wait for her life to happen. She would make it happen. "I'll go to breakfast with you now, and then we'll spend the afternoon with Baba," Sherazad said. "I'll make sure everyone sees me. Will that help lessen your worries?" The lines across Irsa's forehead stretched even farther. Sherazad could see her warring with herself. "Is what you're doing really of such import?" "Yes." Sherazad did not falter in her response. Her sister looked to the floor, wrapping the end of her chestnut braid around her fingers. "Tonight is a dangerous night to be taking chances." "Why is that?" Irsa paused a final time, still prevaricating. Then she leveled her gaze on Sherazad. "Come with me." She took her hand and led her outside. They rounded the maze of tents until they stood at the fringes of the encampment. There, in the distance where the soldiers had moved their camp, Sherazad saw a large band of men saddling their horses, assembling their weapons. At the head of this cadre sat Tariq astride his dark bay stallion, his cloak billowing in the breeze. The banner of the White Falcon flew beside him. "They're going out on their first raid," Irsa said. "They plan to leave by midday." What? Alarm crept into Sherazade's stomach, tangling her insides in a coil of knots.
A raid? Tariq is leading a contingent of troops toward a nearby stronghold tonight, with the intention of overthrowing its emir and seizing control, Irsa said quietly.
How do you know this? Sherazade cried.
Rahim told me.
Which stronghold?
He didn't tell me that, Irsa confessed. I do still share a tent with the Khalifa of Khorasan, after all.
Once more, Sherazade's thoughts flitted through her mind like stones across a pond. If Tariq was leading a band of soldiers on a raid along the nearby border of Khorasan and Parthia, they were likely trying to seize control of that border, which would leave the border at risk, leave it vulnerable to outside attack. Vulnerable to Salim Ali el-Sharif, the power-hungry Sultan of Parthia. Perhaps that's their intention. A sudden chill ran through her blood. Sherazade had to tell Khalid at once. She had to travel to Rey tonight and prevent the possibility of war with Parthia, before even more innocent people died without cause. As her mind raced, a renewed sense of guilt crashed down upon her. Sherazade was responsible for this impending disaster as well. Were it not for her, Tariq would never have engaged in this foolhardy pursuit for justice, this foolhardy quest to avenge his love.
Sherazade?
Irsa took hold of her shoulder, shaking her from the tumult of her thoughts.
Have you been listening to a word I've said?
What?
It's not dangerous, is it? Irsa asked. What you're doing, it's not dangerous.
Sherazade laughed, but the sound did not ring true. She spun away from the soldiers with their gleaming swords. The two sisters returned to their tent. Without a word, Sherazade poured water from the pitcher into the copper basin. Her hand shook, causing her reflection to waver. Setting her jaw, Sherazade tugged her wrinkled kamis over her head, determined to wash and go about her day. To stay the course, whatever may come.
Sherazade!
Irsa's outcry came from a face drained of all color.
Curse these damnable bruises, as well as Artan Temujin.
She brushed aside her sister's worry with a flick of a wrist. Don't concern yourself. These are not serious injuries. But Sherazade could see her words falling on deaf ears and dubious eyes. Should she simply tell Irsa how she had sustained them, confess all and hope her sister would keep quiet for just a short while longer? When goats fly. It was too risky, especially now that Irsa was confiding in Rahim. If Irsa misspoke, Rahim might say something to Tariq. And Tariq, of all people, could not know anything about her visits to Khalid. The risk was simply too high. The hatred simply too rife. No, it was best Sherazade not say a word of it to Irsa. Sherazade turned her back on her sister and began scrubbing water and a gritty bar of Nibulsi soap along her body. When she lifted her arm, the lingering scent of sandalwood rose from her skin.
Khalid.
Fear stole its way into her heart. Her throat swelled tight. Clenching her teeth, Sherazade fought back the rush and continued bathing.
Now is not the time for cowardice.
After all, if everything went to plan, they would have answers soon. Once Sherazade and Khalid knew what to do about the curse, all could be revealed. Then everyone would know the truth. They would all know that the boy Sherazade loved was not the monster they believed him to be. That he was and would be the great king their kingdom so desperately needed. The great king Sherazade saw when she flew over their city. Until then, she had to stay silent, for it would not help matters if the boy king everyone so despised was cursed to rule a forsaken kingdom. The army massing against Khalid would only be spurred to action if they knew the tides of fortune had turned against him as well. But once Sherazade found a solution, she could tell Tariq the truth. Perhaps then, his hatred for Khalid would begin to dissipate, and reconciliation could begin. For ending this curse was not simply about ending their suffering. Scheherazade had to put a stop to the war she'd set in motion. It was not just a matter of love. It was a matter of life, and she meant to right it, once and for all. Jahandar permitted one eye to sliver open, then shut, then open once more. He silently cursed himself when he realized his error. "Are you awake, old friend?" A warm voice rang out in the darkness. Jahandar tried to remain still, hoping the man at his bedside would leave. Low laughter rumbled nearby. "I saw your eye open just now," the voice continued. "And I know you woke yesterday and earlier today. Come now, Jahandar. I am not here to cast judgment. I only wish to speak with a dear friend." Jahandar took a wary breath, vexed with himself for stirring in the first place. He'd felt someone enter the tent a moment ago, and he'd thought it must be Irsa or Scheherazade, so he'd woken from his fallacious slumber, eager to speak with his children again. But he was not ready to speak with anyone else, much less Reza bin Latif. Nevertheless, he'd already made his blunder. Jahandar supposed he had to own up to it, lest anyone suspect the truth behind his mysterious ailment. Or rather, the lie behind it. Jahandar let both his eyes drift open. His friend of many years sat before him, a lamp of polished brass glowing nearby. Reza sent a patient smile his way. "You look terrible." Jahandar's shoulders were racked by laughter that ended in a series of coughs. "The years have been kinder to you, without a doubt, but not by much." It was true. The last time Jahandar had seen Reza bin Latif was not long after his wife and daughter had perished within days of each other. A tragedy no man should have to endure. One that had clearly taken its toll. Reza had lost weight. His hair had thinned on top while graying at the temples. His mustache was fuller, and he'd begun to grow a beard. He no longer had the appearance of a man who found much joy in life. The lines along his face were not lines drawn by delight or satisfaction. They were lines drawn by thought. Or perhaps calculation? "What time of day is it?" Jahandar asked, his voice cracked and dry. Reza handed him some water. "Almost dinner time." Jahandar took an absent-minded sip. "My daughters will be by shortly." As soon as the words fell from his tactless lips, Jahandar wanted to catch them. How thoughtlessly cruel! But Reza did not seem to notice. "You are a lucky man. Such devoted children. I'm told Irsa comes to see you quite frequently." "Scheherazade has been by twice today." Jahandar took another sip. Reza propped a hand beneath his beard. "That's good to hear. I was told she's been ill the last few days." "Ill?" Jahandar's brows gathered on his forehead. "Old friend," Reza paused to smile, then leaned closer. "I've not come to waste your time or trouble you unnecessarily. I know you're still recovering, and there is a pressing matter I need to attend to this evening. But may I ask you a question?"
"Of course."
"I've heard many conflicting rumors of what occurred the night of the storm in Ray." Jahandar stiffened. His free hand drew tight over the book. It still felt warm to the touch, though it no longer burned with the same fervor. The cold metal of the key around his neck weighed him down like an anchor dragging along the seafloor. Reza observed his reaction in silence, then he pressed on, without missing a beat.
"Can you not tell me what happened?"
I do not remember."
Jahandar's broken nails dug into the worn leather of the book.
"Truly?"
Jahandar nodded. Reza sighed with obvious reluctance.
"I am not one of the shiftless masses, Jahandar John. We've spent many years of friendship together. I was there when Irsa was born, and I was there when Mina died."
His voice grew soft.
"I did all I could, and I always wished I could do more. Jahandar's heart caught in his throat. It was true. Reza had brought his own personal physician to Jahandar's wife's sickbed, though his efforts had been for naught. And Reza had cared for Shahrzad and Irsa in the days following, when Jahandar had been unable to do so.
"I know, old friend," Jahandar whispered. "I will never forget what you did."
Reza's smile was sad and small. "Alas, such trying times can never be forgotten. But I'd rather we recall what friends are capable of in our times of need." He paused for emphasis. "Just as I know what you are capable of, even if there are only a handful of people who are aware of it." This too was true. Reza had always known that Jahandar possessed unique abilities. Reza steepled both hands beneath his chin, letting his gaze fall upon Jahandar's smooth scalp. "Old friend, did you do something the night of the storm?" Could he confide in Reza bin Latif? Could he trust him with his secret? "If you did," Reza pressed in a low voice, "please know, I will not judge you. In fact, I will celebrate you, for I know you did not mean to do anything wrong. And, if you did do something, it must have been a remarkable feat." Jahandar swallowed. "One we would have a tremendous use for." Reza finished. "Use? Reza had a use for Jahandar?" "If you accomplished such an astounding feat alone," Reza said quietly, his brown eyes bright in their fervor, "can you imagine what you could accomplish with a force of soldiers at your back, with the strength of an army at your beck and call?" Jahandar's gaze flitted across Reza bin Latif's face, across the lines drawn by deep thought and obvious calculation. He saw it. He knew what Reza was doing, knew it, and did not care. Jahandar realized that for the first time in many years, for the first time since Mina had died and he had lost his position in the palace, Reza truly saw him, saw the man he'd first met those many years ago, a vizier to the caliph of Khorasan, a man of power and influence, a man worthy of Reza's consideration. In low tones, Jahandar began talking, and did not stop. Not until Reza bin Latif smiled with satisfaction. "Just like old times." The Winged Serpent. Shahrzad had not intended to torment Khalid with the magic carpet. Not at first, but he brought it on himself. Truly he did. The moment the Caliph of Khorasan said, with coolly regal arrogance, that only a child would be afraid to fly, Shahrzad knew it was a challenge she was meant to take on. Meant to see fall to glorious pieces. After all, even she had been afraid at first, but Khalid need not know that. As soon as he settled onto the carpet, Shahrzad coaxed it into the air without a word of warning. A volley of expletives flew from Khalid's mouth. They only became more foul as Shahrzad urged the carpet high above the city in a twist of whistling wind. Laughing into the darkness, she spurred the magic carpet even faster, then rose to her knees. When Khalid tried to tug her back down, his eyes flashing, she sent a look of mocking scorn over one shoulder. "Get down," Khalid yelled over the wind, taking tight hold of her waist. "Don't be a bore. You'll fall." "No, I won't." She spread her arms wide. "How do you know that?" "I just do." "Get down," he insisted, his jaw rigid. "Please."
"Why?"
"Because you're killing me by degrees." Grumbling, Shahrzad eased back onto the carpet. Khalid pulled her into his chest, his breath fast against her neck. A small part of her felt guilty. The rest felt smug. Serves him right. Perhaps the King of Kings won't be so arrogant next time. She grinned to herself, Khalid ceasing to be arrogant was just as unlikely as her ceasing to provoke him. It was simply too easy, and much too much fun. "Are you finally starting to breathe in a normal fashion?" Sherzad teased. "I must confess, I find your behavior rather odd, considering you said only a child would be afraid to fly."
"I wasn't afraid."
Khalid wrapped a forearm of corded muscle around her. She slanted a disbelieving look his way. "You just lied to me."
"I wasn't afraid," he repeated. "I was terrified."
When she laughed, Sherzad was rewarded with one of his uncommonly effortless smiles, the kind that changed a face of shadows into one of light, the kind that made her want to forget how small the magic carpet happened to be. "You're beautiful," Sherzad commented softly. Khalid's hand tightened around her waist. "Are you not stealing the words customarily reserved for a man?" "You're welcome to say other, less customary things." Though her tone was airy, her pulse stuttered.
"Such as?"
"You're a smart man. I'm sure you'll think of something."
"I already have."
The touch of Khalid's lips trailing below her ear sent a swirl of desire through her. It's a shame we're otherwise occupied at the moment. Or else she would definitely act upon it. They traveled over a stretch of desert near an expanse of mountains. Above them, a few lonely stars flickered, stitched across a dark fabric of night. Khalid soon grew accustomed to the rush of wind against his face, the tense set of his shoulders slackening. After a time, the air began to thicken with the scent of salt, and the sea glimmered along the horizon. The carpet slowed as they neared the promontory, before landing by the pool of water set against the cliff. Sherzad secured the magic carpet to her back while Khalid unsheathed his shamshir, his movements like that of a prowling jungle cat. Though she'd behaved in the same manner only a few nights ago, Sherzad rolled her eyes. "That's unnecessary, not to mention insulting."
"Forgive me for not feeling welcome wherever I go," he muttered.
"And for not taking any chances." With a shake of her head, Sherzad reached for his free hand, threading her fingers through his.
"Sherzadjan."
Musa emerged from between the strange statues at the opposite side of the pool. Again, Khalid did not miss a beat. Though he recognized the Magus, he tugged Sherzad closer and raised his shamshir. Musa smiled at Khalid, his teeth like pearls set against ebony.
"I did not think you would come."
It took Khalid a moment to reply. "My wife can be very persuasive." His sword remained vigilant. The Magus's eyes crinkled at the corners.
"It is good to see you. It has been so long."
Khalid said nothing. Musa strode closer. He appeared to be studying Khalid, perhaps trying to see traces of the boy he'd known in the young man before him.
"You look
like my father," Khalid finished in a clipped tone. "Many have told me."
"You do, but I see your mother in you, most especially in your eyes."
"You have no cause to flatter me. Lies do not become you."
"I am not lying."
Musa rounded the pool.
"Your eyes may be the same color as your father's, but I can tell you they see the world as Layla did. They see all. Your father," he failed to forestall a grimace, "saw very little."
Khalid's eyes narrowed to slits.
"My father saw enough."
The meaning behind his rejoinder was evident. A father who saw enough to destroy a small boy's world.
"No."
Musa stopped before them, his colorful cloak swaying above the tan stone.
"He saw what he wished to see, and he never gave anyone the chance to show him otherwise."
There was obvious meaning to the Magus's words as well.
"I did not come here to be lectured by my mother's tutor,"
Khalid countered. "Nor did I come here to grant you the chance to win me over, Musa Zaragoza." Musa nodded.
I did not expect to win you over in a night, but... Do not expect to win me over, Khalid said coldly. Ever.
Khalid John, Sherzad whispered. She tugged on his hand in silent censure.
Though he did not appear the least bit remorseful, Khalid squeezed her palm in acknowledgement.
Musa's smile turned wistful. I am so very sorry, little Paling, for everything.
Sherzad felt Khalid's body go rigid beside her.
Little Paling, little tiger.
You do not have permission to call me that. Khalid's features were drawn and tight. I am the Caliph of Khorasan to you, nothing more.
In that moment, everything about Khalid harkened back to a time when Sherzad had lived in fear of the dawn, when all she knew of him was a boy of ice and stone, who murdered his brides without cause or apology.
A time when all she had were stories fueled by hatred. It pained her to see Khalid returning to this, a shell of what he was, a shadow of what he could be.
Musa bowed, his fingers to his forehead.
1,000 apologies, Sayidi. Glaring at Khalid, Sherzad shook off his grasp.
Musa Effendi, please do not... I am not offended, my dearest star, Musa replied. I know why the young caliph despises me so. I did nothing when he begged for help. It has haunted me for many years.
There was nothing you could have done, Sherzad cried. Had you tried to help, you likely would have been killed as well.
No. Musa canted his mouth to one side. When we are faced with our darkest fears, inaction is for the weak or the hopeless. There is always something to be said or done, though words alone are mere scratchings on a page.
Khalid finished, his voice even colder. The power behind them lies with the person.
Musa stood completely still. You remember.
A careful smile broke across his face.
That gives me a great deal of comfort. Though I do not deserve it, I thank you.
Khalid's chest rose and fell in steady consideration. And I thank you for all you have done for Sherzad.
Musa bowed again. Sayidi.
He turned his attention to her, his expression undisguised in its warmth. Your impatient tutor waits for you in his usual spot, my lady. The creature waiting on the beach was most definitely not Artan Temujin. It was easily 5 times as long as a man, and twice as thick. But these particulars did not give rise to Sherzad's distress. What alarmed her most was that it resembled a snake, covered in darkly iridescent scales, replete with a giant hood. And wings? Sherzad swallowed a strangled scream. Khalid drew his sword with a quick rasp.
Where have you been? Artan demanded, suddenly emerging from behind the slithering monstrosity.
What the hell is that thing? Sherzad tried not to yell. The creature coiled around itself while she spoke, a rainbow of colors torquing across its scales, its leathery wings gleaming in the moonlight.
Who? Shesha?
Artan grinned with wicked humor.
He's harmless.
The snake bared its black fangs as though it understood and disagreed rather wholeheartedly.
He's just a silly winged serpent.
Artan waved a flippant hand.
Who enjoys frightening people and, like any good tyrant, much of his appearance is for show.
He's really very sweet most of the time. Throughout this entire exchange, Khalid had not shifted position. His shamshir had stayed poised at his side, his body between Sherzad and that of the snake. His eyes trained on Artan. Now both the sword and its master turned toward the bald-headed boy, with unflinching intent. Artan snorted.
I suppose this is the cursed husband?
He laughed to himself. Did this fool not hear a word I said about Khalid's temper? Before Sherazad could interject, Artan bounded over the serpent's tail and onto the sand.
You really are as humorless as she let on, he continued, eyeing Khalid askance. But there's little I can do to remedy that.
The second offense.
Should I call you Khalid? He pressed. Because you're not technically my king. No matter. I'm Artan Temujin, and after much persuading, I've come to rescue you from your fate. But only after your wife begged me. On her knees, of course. He snickered. I do so prefer her when she grovels.
It was not the barrage of taunts that sparked a reaction. It was the sight of Artan's burned forearms that registered on Khalid's face. Sherazad winced when she saw it. Only someone who knew Khalid well would notice. The slightest twinge beneath an eye. It appeared and disappeared in a flash of recognition, in an instant of understanding. Oh, God. Then Artan made the lamentable decision to wink at Khalid and clap him on the shoulder. The final offense. The shamshir flashed through the darkness toward Artan's throat, stopping a hair's breadth from its mark. Smiling the entire time, Artan brought both hands beside his face as though he meant to surrender. Then the center of his palms promptly burst into flame.
I'll admit I was trying to provoke you, Artan said without a hint of fear. It's a pastime of mine. Sherazad told me you have a temper. But things have escalated a bit faster than I might have intended. Why don't we...
Was it you who burned her? Though a bead of sweat slipped down his neck, Khalid did not flinch from the whirling spheres of fire. Artan's eyes grew wide. Unlike Khalid, he was unable to mask his reaction. Guilt rippled across his features, causing his bare scalp to flush red.
Stop it, both of you.
Sherazad grabbed Artan by the back of his shirt and yanked him away from Khalid.
What are you doing?
For a moment, she considered punching Artan square in the nose.
Are you completely deranged? Then she whirled on Khalid. And you have been nothing short of abominable this entire evening. First with Musa Effendi, and now with Artan. They're trying to help us, Khalid.
Despite her condemnations, the shamshir stayed at the ready, and the spheres of fire continued spinning.
Put them away at once, you miserable louts, Sherazad insisted. This is why the world would be a far better place in the hands of women.
By far better, you mean far less interesting? Artan grinned once more, though he extinguished his weapons.
Wouldn't you agree, O King of Kings?
Khalid lowered his sword but kept his icy stare fixed on Artan. Artan paused in consideration.
If not for our brief but charming exchange, I'd almost be worried you'd married a mute, my dear little snipe. I'd understand given how much you talk, but I have to say I'm a bit surprised.
He's not mute, Sherazad said. He just doesn't suffer fools.
Therefore, he must have very little to say around you.
Artan winked, flinging an arm about her shoulders and pulling her close. Sherazad placed a hand in his face, shoving him back. He speaks when the company merits it, you ass.
However, does he survive being surrounded at all times by such fools?
One stab at a time, Khalid said quietly, sheathing his sword with a pointed snap. At that, Artan threw back his head and laughed.
Oh, I like him, little snipe. He doesn't say much, but he speaks true.
He can stay.
Stay?
Sherazad said. I thought we were going to see your aunt.
We are.
Artan tugged on an earring. It's just that Shesha's being a bit uncooperative at the moment. He pivoted in the sand and moved toward higher ground. Then he tossed two fur-lined robes back at them.
Find a way to secure these to that tiny carpet. You're going to need them. Sherzad eyed the thick piles of fur at their feet. Artan, where are we going? Her voice dripped with suspicion.
To a hidden fortress.
He waggled his brows.
Carved into a mountain.
The dark side of a mirror. This was the farthest Sherzad had ever flown on the magic carpet. Before, her journeys had taken no more than an hour. True, she'd traveled faster than she'd ever believed possible. The ground had blurred beneath her, and the stars had stretched thin on either side, but she'd always had a vague sense of where she was going. This time, she had not the slightest notion. The carpet soared eastward for more than 2 hours. Then, with an expanse of mountains, far higher and far more imposing than those in Khorasan, appeared on the horizon, the carpet began to rise. The air began to grow crisp and cold. Without a word, Khalid draped one of the fur-lined cloaks around them and held her close. The chill had not seeped through Sherzad's skin. It never did, thanks to the warmth of the magic in her veins. But she was not one to shy away from the chance to feel Khalid's body against hers. A smile curved across her face as she settled into his chest and traced an idle fingertip along his palm, all while surveying the mountains silhouetted in the distance. Sherzad had commanded the carpet to follow the winged serpent, but she still felt strange watching the slithering beast cavort through the clouds. She'd never seen such an odd creature before. Though she'd heard tell of such things, Sherzad had always considered them as one might consider a faraway star, or a tale of old. In the starlight, Shesha's long silver whiskers trailed on either side of his pointed snout, like slender ribbons streaming in a soft breeze. His whiskers were whimsical in their bent, and his eyes were unnerving, for they glittered with the blood-red menace of the finest Hindustani ruby. Soon, Shesha swerved to the left, toward a snow-capped peak in the distance. This mountain was of the peculiar sort. Its west-facing expanse was sheared flat, as though a giant sword had cleaved down one side of it. The stone itself was a deep blue-gray. Under cover of a cloud-darkened sky, it appeared black. So black that it seemed to absorb all the light around it. Not a single stitch of snow clung to its smooth surface. As they rounded the strange mountain's apex, Sherzad saw that its east-facing side curved upward in jagged peaks, almost like a set of fingers fanning straight into the sky. Shesha veered toward the lowest outcropping, then dove suddenly, his leathery wings pulled tight against his scales. The magic carpet followed, and an icy wind whipped against Sherzad's face, all but stealing the very breath from her body. Between the thumb and forefinger of the mountain rose a tiered building, carved straight from the rock. Had she not known to look for it, Sherzad would have missed it entirely. Its four gabled roofs were stacked one on top of the other, in graduated height. A wooden sign in a language of golden slashes hung above the entrance. As they landed in the small courtyard before the building, a gust of wind riffled a set of brass chimes dangling from the timber eaves. The melody was of the eerie, doleful sort, the sort that clung to one's bones long after its notes were lost on the breeze. It was in step with the empty, ice-laden expanse around them, and the single stone bowl of fire lying squat in the middle of the courtyard. A sputter of blue and orange amid a stretch of black and white.
Charming, isn't it?
Artan remarked as he tugged the fur-trimmed hood of his cloak over his bare head.
It's different.
Sherzad pulled her own cloak tighter about her.
You should see it in winter.
At that, Sherzad saw Khalid subdue a smile. The trio strode toward the entrance, leaving Shesha to slither toward the fire. A set of low doors with a high stone threshold stood before them. Artan removed his sandals, and Sherzad and Khalid followed suit. Not a soul had come to greet them, which did not bode well with Sherzad. The floors were covered in a thick lacquered paper, polished smooth. Their surface was strangely warm, as though a fire burned beneath them. A faint scent of mint floated through the air. At least Sherzad thought it was mint. Mint mixed with lemons, or perhaps it was aloe wood. Artan moved through the narrow hallways with the swift ease of years past. Slender lanterns, covered in waxy parchment, lit the way before them. They proceeded up a set of stairs and into another set of hallways. As they entered a shadowy corridor, a creature sprang from the darkness, hissing at Artan. It was white and lizard-like, around the size of a small jungle cat, with sharp talons and a smattering of dark spots across its back. The spiked fan along its spine was turned up, and its tail whipped about in warning. As it hissed, drops of saliva struck the lacquered paper floor, burning holes through its surface. Thin trails of silvery smoke curled in their wake. "Get back, you tiny menace!" Artan threatened the creature with an upturned, outstretched palm. Though nothing happened, Sherzad thought she heard the sizzle of a spark catching flame. The lizard continued spitting in Artan's direction, its spine arching higher and its yellow eyes glowing. The soft sound of a woman's laughter emanated from the other end of the corridor.
"Has Tolu's son finally returned?"
The woman's voice was not pleasant, but it was not displeasing either. Sherzad stepped closer to Khalid, his fingers wrapped around the hilt of his sword. Artan snorted.
"Relieve your pitiful excuse for a sentry of her duty, and I'll tell you."
A harsh word Sherzad did not recognize split through the gloom. The lizard retreated, but not without hissing once more at Artan and spitting near his bare foot for good measure.
"Is it safe for me to proceed, Aunt Isuke?" Artan said, his amusement still evident.
Her low laughter resonated once more.
"As safe as you'll ever be, son of Tolu."
After exchanging a wary glance, Sherzad and Khalid followed Artan into a large room with teak wood beams running across its ceiling. A floor of woven rushes extended before them. Seated near a low table in its center was a slender woman who reminded Sherzad of a bird. Not a bird of song or a bird in flight, but rather a bird of prey. Her back was as straight as an arrow, and her eyes were two pieces of flint. Her hair was long and hung about her shoulders like a cape of polished pewter. One thin braid fell behind an ear. Threaded through it was a string of colorful glass beads. Her tunic was trimmed in fur and tied across her chest with a leather cord. She did not smile when she saw them. She merely quirked her head with interest. Her slow-eyed look was alert and unwavering.
"You've brought friends."
Her gaze drifted to Khalid first. When he remained stone-faced, Isuke turned toward Sherzad, her eyes lingering.
"I think of them as friends," Artan grinned. "They may not."
"The girl agrees," Isuke confirmed. "The boy does not."
She sniffed the air as though she could discern their thoughts through scent.
"Yet."
"I gathered as much," Artan laughed.
"Then again,"
Isuke cocked her chin in the other direction.
"The boy cannot have friends. He does not permit himself the luxury."
She blinked slowly.
"For he is shrouded in darkness."
Khalid's hand tightened around Sherzad's. She swallowed, her eyes meeting Artan's.